Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 121, Will Churnland. Hopefully you remember Will from episode 48, where we really spent a lot of time getting into his background and really understood how he got to where he is. And he's an amazing guy. He's only 25 years old. Yes, 25 years old. And yet he is crushing it, and he continues to crush it, and his business keeps evolving. He has helped bring 2,000 products to market, and he's 25 years old. 2,000 products to market. So we spend some time catching up on that, and really I'm interested that he is moving his business model because he just seems so out there and so far ahead, and I just love it. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And boy, I'm so happy to have back probably one of the most listened to podcast episodes that I had, Will Churnland. Welcome, Will.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Man, you blew people away because, by the way, you were 25. That was back in December. Did you turn 26 yet?
No, I turned 26 in November, so still 25.
All right, so we still got time. Still,
yeah.
25.
Yep.
Incredible. And your big story is that you helped bring 2,000 products to market. It's just, it's in your nature now, right? That's no big deal.
Yeah, it's pretty easy when you're dealing with larger catalogs. It makes it seem a lot less daunting.
What do you mean by larger catalogs?
Well, when you're dealing with suppliers and different wholesale accounts where they carry over 100 products, you can launch a bunch of products at once, opposed to trying to launch 2,000 individual private label brands would take me multiple lifetimes.
Well, and I thought that's what you meant, and that's very cool because I'd be interested. So you find an efficiency launching 5, 10, 15 items at a time?
Oh, yeah, for sure. If I just signed up a new wholesale account, I'm going to go through using a software like Jungle Scout to see what their top maybe 15, 20 top-selling items are and go and source those immediately and get those up on Amazon. And then from there, kind of work my way down the list from the top sellers and kind of check my way down the list until I basically have sold every product that they offer.
So you're looking for the products that a wholesaler already has in the market but not on Amazon?
Sometimes that, and also sometimes I'll find a U.S. brand that is just not doing a proper job on Amazon. I'm sure everyone has seen it out there where you see some U.S. brand in your niche, and they're the top-selling product. They have 1,200 reviews, and they've only have like 3 of the 5 bullet points filled out, and their title has only 4 words in it. And you go, wow, this person's selling more than anyone because they have a real brand. But at the same time, they're not optimizing their listing at all. They have 40 people competing for the buy box, and basically the whole listing is a mess. And so I'd contact those companies and tell them, hey, I can fix your Amazon account. I can fix your Amazon experience. Let me sell your product. And then I'd go and basically fix everything and get all the sales.
And so they end up eventually that other listing just falls off because they stop selling to those other sellers?
I work it out a bunch of different ways. I work it out that way sometimes too, where I say, hey, you don't want all these jokers selling your product on Amazon. They're destroying your minimum advertised pricing. That's hurting your wholesale accounts. That's making all of your different brick and mortar stores complain to you for people undercutting their prices on Amazon. Sell to me. I'll sell at your minimum advertised pricing. I'll make sure all your customers are taken care of and get quality customer service. And then that way, instead of having 30 different jokers contacting you for a bunch of itty-bitty little purchase orders, I'll just do one purchase order once a month, pay you in cash, be a lot easier to deal with, keep your stuff in stock, keep your prices where they're supposed to be, and take care of everything else.
And then usually you also would expand their product line, right? You would say, hey, I know you have these and you have other products that you want to bring onto the marketplace too. Let me help you with those. That's a very attractive conversation.
Exactly. And like one example I have right now is I sell products from this official, it's like a real brand of like UFC type equipment, like MMA equipment. And one of their boxing gloves goes for $150 retail. And it comes in 5 different colors and 5 different sizes. And so right there, it's just 25 SKUs at, say, $75 a piece, my cost, just to have one unit in stock of every size and color of just one glove. And so when I can go to them and say, hey, the reason why you're not selling so well on Amazon is because all the rest of your distributors are a bunch of scrubs. They can't actually keep all your stuff in stock. They can't keep everything prime. And so as soon as they don't become prime, you lose all your sales. So basically, I can keep all your stuff in stock. I can keep it prime. And as long as I do that, sales are going to be great, and we're going to have this mutual beneficial agreement.
So you place an order with them. So are you using Jungle Scout or some tool to estimate how many units that they're going to sell in 30 days, and then you're buying, you know, 30, 60 days, whatever, or 45 days to make sure you have stock? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, this is the beauty of it, is that You're not dealing with these Chinese companies where you have to buy 45, 60 days worth of stock. Their shipping time is 3 days.
Okay.
You know, and so then
and you're having the vendor ship right to Amazon for you in this scenario. Right?
In this scenario, they're shipping it to a third party warehouse and labeling it
okay.
there.
Okay. Press center.
Yeah.
Prep center.
But the thing is that what makes it so sweet is because when you can get the inventory in 3 days, you can only have to buy, say, 2 weeks of inventory at a time, so you don't overextend yourself. And then when you don't overextend yourself, also too, you can do a lot better job of managing your cash and your cash flow, because you're compounding the interest, say, 20 times a year instead of 4 times a year like you are with a private label product.
It's smart. And then the other thing is you're actually helping the vendor, because they can kind of expect, you know, they can work their production flow around, you know, keeping you filled every 2 weeks. As they get an experience with you, that just helps their business.
Yep. It's one of those things where when I go and pitch to these U.S. companies, I always kind of come off at first like a used car salesman. Like, I'm kind of this like grimy dude who's just trying to make a buck off of them. But as I work more and more with these U.S.-based companies, they tend just to love me, because all I do is only contact them when I want to buy more stuff. And then, two, I reason with them, and I kind of see things from their perspective. So they can say to me, hey, we're coming out with a version 2 of this glove. We have 500 units left of version 1. Do you want to buy every unit left in stock? I'll say, yeah, I would love to, because I know there's not going to be any more in stock. I can increase the price even more, because I'm not really worried, because I know they'll eventually sell out because people want that older model. And for them, they go, great, we just got our last 500 units off our hands. Now we can focus that cash towards R&D for the second version. This is perfect for us. And the thing is that these wholesalers don't really realize is that when they come out with a version 2 of a product, that's bad news for us, because then we have to get a new listing, we have to rank it, we have to do all the work all over again. We love the older item that has all the reviews and all the rankings. So when they go, hey, we only have 1,000 pairs of these and we're never going to make them again, I want to buy every pair they have left, because I know eventually no one else is going to have them, and then I get to set the price.
And you're not necessarily going to try to negotiate that price down heavily, like, oh, you know, if you want me to take your old stock, well, you're going to have to do better on the price, because, as you said, you're going to be able to charge a premium. So if you were getting it at Keystone, you're able, really, because the price is going to go up even more, you're now below Keystone, right?
Yeah, not only that, it's like, hey, I remember when I just bought 500 pairs of your last boxing gloves you had in stock. How about you don't make me pay for inbound shipping for that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Now, that would be a reasonable thing.
Exactly. Like, I'm not sitting there trying to price gouge them, but at the same time, it's like, hey, let's not be nitpicky about this. Or, like, two, I don't ever send my returns back to the manufacturer. And, like, with this manufacturer I'm talking about, they have 1,000 distributors throughout the country, but their average yearly volume is $2,500 a person. A distributor, because they're selling to a bunch of small little UFC gyms who buy a few gloves here and there. And so, like, when I can buy $2,500 worth of it and I'm already in the top 50% of your distributors, that's pretty sweet, because even though these companies may seem semi-big in the $2 to $20 million a year revenue range, they're actually not that big, and they might only have 6-7 people on staff. And so if they're doing, say, $5 million a year in revenue and you place a $50,000 order with them, right there, you're already 1% of their total yearly revenue with one order. You're already someone to reckon with. And so it's nice, because you can build real relationships with real people, because these companies aren't like mega big.
Well, how did you determine that they're selling 2,500 per little, operation?
I asked them.
Okay. So that's a good question, right? So there's a pro tip, right? So when you're talking, especially if you're at a show, these are the great places to have a conversation. Hey, what's your average, what's your average buyer buying from you? And they say $2,500. Well, hey, now all of a sudden, like you said, now you're a player because in your case, you're 20 times their size, right? And so they're definitely going to give you first dibs on what they have, right? Especially if you're honoring MAP, especially.
Yeah, if you honor MAP and you order large amounts, like they love you. I've had it many a times where it's like the sales manager at these companies, I get like their personal cell phone numbers and stuff like that and hang out with them when I'm in town because like every time I place an order, they get a cut of it. So they just love me.
Mm. Love it. Love it. Well, how do you know, I got to take us to break, but I can't end this conversation because, you know, again, Will has helped bring several thousand products to market. He's still 25. You're killing me, kid. You're still 25. You spent your winter not up north where you live. Where were you?
I was in Buenos Aires.
Oh, you're killing me. Every time I see a picture of Will, we're friends on Facebook. He's at a USC fight. He's in some place. You live a very – you have a true lifestyle business. Is that fair?
Yeah, I don't take on things that would detract from my lifestyle.
Now, okay, so you're 25 and you know that. So when an opportunity comes, what goes through your mind?
A lot. I had a very, very juicy opportunity come up a few months ago where it actually would have been – it would have been a big deal and everything, but it would have been with a private equity firm where they basically would have gave me like an unlimited bankroll to make the biggest Amazon account ever through mergers and acquisitions and through just brute force. And so that was pretty enticing to kind of like take everything to the next level and really kind of make the biggest Amazon account ever. But then at the same time, when you can calculate the amount of like profit sharing that's involved, the amount of work that's involved, and the amount of protections you have not being actually an owner in a business, it didn't really seem too enticing to me after everything.
It wasn't what you wanted to do, right? You could just go get a job if that's what you wanted. You don't want to create a job, right?
Well, yeah, it's the kind of thing where it would double my pay but 10x my workload. So It's like the ratio wasn't there.
How many hours a week do you work now, Will?
It really, really depends. Like today was I probably worked like 3 or 4 hours. Yesterday I worked like 4 hours. But then there's easily days where I just like don't even open my laptop. So
and you're not touching product anymore. I mean, you haven't touched product in a long time.
Yeah, that's something – unless it's like a sample or like we got a bunch of like goofy like kickboxing gear that we got a bunch of samples of just so we can mess around with it. So like just stupid stuff like that.
How do you find your products now? I mean, don't give away your secrets, of course. But, I mean, how are you – you've evolved your business. So how are you finding products now?
I got no secrets.
Okay.
I got no secrets.
I love it.
I was just kind of going over today with someone on a call with my screen sharing, kind of just going – I kept clicking the also bought with and a bunch of, like, gym and fitness stuff. And at first, I was on this training mask. Anyone can look that up. Training mask. It has like does like $100,000 a month. It has like 100 sellers competing for the buy box, and it has like 1,300 reviews. And anyways, I was using an example of a great product and a great company to go contact, to go source. And then also sold with had a bunch of other small brands that I'd never heard of. And then I looked up all those companies. They also would be great companies to contact. And so when you're contacting these companies, these U.S. companies to wholesale their products, it may take you an hour and a half on the phone. It may take you 5 minutes before they hang up. But when you get done with, say, 40 hours a week worth of calls, you're going to close at least one deal. And that one deal may make you, whatever, 50 grand over the next year. And so when you can put in 40 hours to make 50 grand, it's usually a pretty good return on your investment.
He's 25, folks. I mean, just listen to this. All right, we're going to take a break because I got to catch my – you know, I just got to realize my half of my life is wasted when I listen to this guy. So we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by me. Yes, I'm sponsoring my own podcast. This is the ecommercemomentum.com is actually sponsoring it. And it's because I've been able to get the new website up. Not finished by any stretch, but I had to get it up because the player is so much better. You really want to go check out the player. It lets you do so many cool things, including Clamor. And if you don't know what Clamor is, once you try it, you will love it. You can take snippets and send them to somebody else. It's very cool. But I've also added a blog page, and I have my first post up, and they're just short thoughts that I have I wrote 19 of them when I was on vacation. Just different things that I think I'm hopefully going to provoke some thought and get you thinking about really investing in your business, because I think it's time to invest in this lifestyle business, but I want you to invest in your life. And some of these things are going to be about life. Some of these things are going to be about reducing touch points, things that, you know, are on my mind. And I talk to so many people, they're on their mind too. So I think there's some benefit there. So ecommercemomentum.com, when you sign up, you will get 25. Yeah, here my big sales pitch, 25 things you can outsource in your business. I think most of them will be intuitive. There's a few there you might say, huh, I might didn't even think I could do that, but you can. And I give you a list of different things, all free. And I just hope you sign up, because then you'll receive notifications when I do post a new blog post or when I have a new episode coming out. These episodes, you know, two a week plus some blog posts, I put out a lot of content. I really hope you enjoy it. Again, if you see somebody that you think is worth me interviewing, send me a note, private message me, and I'd love to talk with them. Ecommercemomentum.com is the sponsor. Take care.
Man, oh man, tell you, this dude is smart. Again, he's 25 years old. Love it. In this segment, we're going to start answering questions. We're going to answer questions from FBA Today Facebook group. And that's a group run by Nate McAllister, and he has the Beaver Vino, Brian Vino, helps manage that account. And I love the questions because I think Will has a really great perspective. He's sell over $5 million, and he's brought so many products to market. So I think he brings a great perspective. But the group itself has a lot of these kind of questions, a lot of answers. Free to join. They just want to make sure you're real. So consider that. We're also going to talk about that Will's getting ready to launch a podcast. And I'm excited about it because his podcast is going to be called Prime Seller Podcast. And what it is, it's the seller who's selling $1 million who wants to sell $10 million. You know, I can help you get so far. I've had some amazing sellers on here that have really helped you break through different levels. And I have a great one next week that I think will really help a lot of people break through. But to get to that next level, there is some serious different issues that arise when you're at that size of a business. And so that's what he's going to focus on. I can't wait. I'm going to be listening. I hope you will be too. It's going to be primesellerpodcast.com. That's a lot to get out, but it's I can't wait. Let's get back into the podcast.
And we're back, and we're talking with Will Chernland, who's blowing my mind because, you know, you speak so certain. You're a 25-year-old guy who's very certain. You're very confident about it because it's a proven method, right? I mean, you've been able to do this and replicate it. So, does it help? Can't hurt. When you talk to a vendor, especially in the group that you – let's just stay with the MMA stuff, right? So obviously you're well-versed in it because Lord knows you go to enough of those things. But that's a niche that you're in, right? You know that subject really well. I assume you have relationships in that industry.
No.
You don't.
I have zero relationships in the industry. It literally just comes out of whenever I see anything, the first thought is, what's it like on Amazon?
No kidding.
And so then I see these guys training this gear, and there's some guys wearing some gear, and it says Bad Boy on a t-shirt. Okay, search Bad Boy into Amazon. Okay, yep. It looks like they do so-and-so sales. Okay, go to their website, badboy.com. Click the Become a Distributor tab. Enter your EIN number and your address and hit submit and see if they email you back. You know what I'm saying? It took – and that, right. That whole entire thing from me seeing that guy wearing Bad Boy or whatever brand on TV to me applying to become a distributor, maybe 90 seconds passed.
But you sold similar items, right? I mean, because you've sold in that industry. That's where I was going with it.
Oh,
so
it somewhat helps kind of knowing that. If you're going to private label something, it really, really, really helps knowing the industry, because then you kind of know exactly what to look for. But when I'm – reselling someone else's brand, I'm depending on them to do the R&D, so I don't really have to do too much research. And they also do the support, since if their product breaks down, people usually contact the brand, not like the Amazon reseller.
And especially since you're a registered seller, you don't really have to worry about that. So tell me, what percentage of your business now is wholesale versus private label?
Half and half, probably.
Okay, so half and half. No kidding. Which do you see growing more? Well, because you could grow either. You got the skill set to grow either. What are you interested in? Maybe that's the better way to say it.
So I'm interested in free money. So when you try to private label stuff and you buy a container worth of items for $40,000, say, and then you can flip it three times a year because of your long lead times, you kind of – not only are you spending massive amounts of cash to get those containers in and risking massive amounts of cash, but also you're waiting months and months and months to get your return. And so the wait time and the risk is not something that I really prefer. And so when I can do stuff like selling to Amazon these registered brands or selling these registered brands where I can look it up, I can see that so-and-so MMA brand does $40,000 a month in revenue – I can become their official distributor, and then I know automatically, even if I don't touch a single listing, it's going to do $40,000 a month. So I can get as much inventory in stock up to $40,000 a month, return my cash every 2 weeks so I get it back in my pocket to reinvest it again and compound it again. And that way I'm taking very, very little risks for bigger rewards since I'm compounding so much faster.
Hmm. How many vendors do you currently have that are in your portfolio?
It's kind of, it's hard because I got multiple different Amazon accounts and I like consult for multiple different companies where I get like a cut of revenue for their company too. So it's under everything. It's maybe, I don't know, we'll just throw out 30.
Oh, okay. Less than I would think.
With this one MMA brand, they might have a total of 1,000 SKUs.
Okay.
So it's very, it adds up very quickly.
You in that conversation before, you had mentioned that you represent companies selling to Amazon. So you're bringing Steve's coffee cup, because he's got a coffee cup right here. So you're bringing my coffee cup brand to sell to Amazon? You'll be a broker in between?
Yes. If it makes sense.
So for example, I know a company who sells on Amazon, does not sell to Amazon, but they hate it because it's a hassle. And so they approached me about, maybe selling the products. There's an opportunity to sell that product directly to Amazon where I could make money doing that?
Yes. The main reason why selling to Amazon is really nice is because Amazon doesn't really play fair, and so they'll automatically rank their products ahead of other people's. They automatically also, if you're having to compete for the buy box, they just win the buy box outright. And so it's smart to – you sell to them, you win the buy box 100% of the time, but you just get a smaller cut of the pie because the margin's a little bit less. So, like, that's not the end of the world either. One of the main things why it's awesome to sell to Amazon is that they buy your inventory outright, okay? And so when they place a purchase order, that's already sold. And so if you can, which it's not that uncommon sometimes, you can find distributors that have 90-day pay terms. And so when you sell to Amazon, they pay you within 60 days. So that gives you 30 days free of floating cash. And so then you can go and put their whole entire catalog up to say, Amazon, I have all this in stock. Order it from me. Amazon will go then and place a order, say, for $100,000 because they want 5 of every of the 10,000 items you just offered to them. Then you go place that order with the company and then skim 20% off the top, and it's just free money. And so anytime like that kind of stuff where you can mess around with cash flow, you can mess around with credit cards, and you can get paid before you have to pay, it's that's the best way to grow your Amazon account as fast as possible, because if you only have a limited bankroll, you can only do the thought experiment of compounding your current bankroll so many times a year at a certain percentage to get to a certain point. So when someone says they have $1,000 and they want to do $1 million a year, it's just not possible unless you do tricks to kind of expand your cash flow.
Right, make it work for you. What about when Amazon, from what I understand, is that you have to accept returns from Amazon. So if it doesn't sell that $100,000 order and they decide to return half of it because it's just not selling, what happens then?
That has not been my case at all with Amazon. Mine has been that they've been very, very conservative with their orders. So they're never, ever placing these huge orders with me. Like I was saying, they've ordered 5 of every unit. Like that's the kind of order they'd place, and then they'd order another 5 next week. Rarely do they place because they know they want to manage their cash flow as efficiently as possible. So they're never placing an order of 500. It doesn't sell out, and then they send me 300 back because they'd never even get an order that big unless I was selling 500 a week.
So, dude, you blow my mind.
So that's just my personal experience is that Amazon's very, very conservative with their ordering.
Well, and what I appreciate is you actually have done that. So somebody else had mentioned that that's what they had heard. You've actually done it. You've had the experience. So that's more valuable to me. you know, I'll drop the hint now that Will is going to be starting a podcast pretty soon, and you don't think we're all going to be listening but now it's for growing your business 10x, and we'll talk about that at the end. But I'm leaning in just to tell you that up front because this is one smart dude, and you're blowing my mind. All right, so smart dude, we're going to answer a couple questions, and these questions I picked because I think they're going to be – I think you can answer some of them. I think you can answer them a little deeper than most, and these are from a group called FBA Today. It's run by Nate McAllister and the Beav. If you don't know Beaver, you should. He's a great guy.
No,
okay,
I
so
don't.
Here's the question, right? Oh, he's just a great guy. You now that dude, you can hang out. You can hang with him. He's a Canadian, but – he's a good beer drinker. He's just a great guy. All right. So this is really related to your private label, and I think this is a good example. What do you what do you do when your listing gets hijacked? So everybody talks about the letters and all that kind of jazz. You've had experience bringing a lot of products to market, so this has happened to you. Can you talk through a couple scenarios?
I have more – not experience in getting hijacked because I usually fly under the radar. I have more experience in me like consulting and going to companies and like retaking over their Amazon account because it's been taken over by hijackers over the years and it's all messed up and under different brands and all that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. there's just usually like a few different steps to go through. First and foremost, if it's just like one hijacker on your thing, of course, register your brand. Second off, buy their item. Send them a letter saying, hey, get off my listing. I don't want to have to escalate this. Buy their item. Take pictures of it. Report it to Amazon as counterfeit. You can do all those kind of things. Also, with these bigger brands I deal with, they can actually go and they figure out who actually is selling their stuff on Amazon and send them an email saying, hey, we're not going to sell to you anymore if you keep selling on Amazon. So there's kind of like almost like a checklist of things I do where it's like, okay, have I tried this? Have I tried this? Have I tried this? And I'll slowly kind of work my way down the list. And usually one of the things kind of sticks. And so like the first and foremost is the cease and desist. And then you'll sit there and report it to Amazon. Then you'll sit there and register your brand. Then if it's still not off, you'll buy an item and report it as counterfeit. And then so there's kind of just a checklist of things. It's not something I deal with a ton, but if you're dealing with it constantly, you're either onto something or you need to do a better job of actually like branding your items so people don't jump on your listing.
Yeah, and I think one of those routines, somebody's going to jump off, right? At some point, they're going to say, all right, this dude's serious because he's coming back. He's coming back. He's not going away.
Well, and if he's not going or he or she is not going away after all that stuff, that means you must have a hot listing that's doing tens of thousands of dollars a month in sales. And if your listing is doing tens of thousands of dollars a month in sales and this guy still won't get off, then it actually might be time to actually hire a lawyer. Because
yeah,
if you're actually
exactly.
If you're actually missing out on like six figures in revenue over the next year because this guy, like – spending $50K in a lawyer actually doesn't sound so bad anymore.
Love it. Wow. Okay, so this is a stupid, easy question, but I think it's important because I've seen this discussion back and forth. Is this a Mac or a PC laptop business for you because of all the extension? And I think that's where the issue is becoming in, is that some people have 12 extensions running, right? Is it a Mac or a PC business?
I run it on a Mac. I basically run everything out of a browser. Back when I was doing a lot more shipping and dealing with like the UPS WorldShip and like USPS software and stuff, I had to do it on a PC because I think they only make those softwares for PC.
Mm-hmm.
I try to do everything on Mac. I'm not a huge computer genius or anything like that. I just want it to work and work consistently, and with my iPhone and my MacBook, they work pretty consistently, and when I've used PCs in the past, they've kind of crashed and always been freezing or something's always been wrong, so I'm a Mac and Apple guy, but not like a fanboy or anything. It just works the best for me.
Works the best. Do you have a certain level Mac? You know, I'm a computer guy, so a PC guy, so do you have a certain level Mac that you use that you find, you know, it takes that level to get, you know, the horsepower you need?
Oh, I need – everything I run is out of a browser, so I need very little horsepower. I have a MacBook Pro, Retina, whatever, but I could easily be running it on the new MacBook that just basically is like a – oversized iPad. It wouldn't be that hard. The main thing I'm doing is Seller Central and email and spreadsheets, and that's it. And I do my spreadsheets in Google Sheets, so they so not only it's in the cloud, but then everyone, no matter what kind of computer they have, they can run it. So that's basically nice. The only three, like Gmail, Amazon Seller Central, and like the Excel sheets. And then besides that, I kind of stay hands off all the rest of third-party softwares.
And you outsource even your bookkeeping and accounting?
Yes.
And is it an accounting firm, or is it somebody who specializes in Amazon or e-commerce?
So they specialize in e-commerce, and now they specialize in Amazon. Like, we had to have multiple meetings with them, like, for multiple hours, just kind of explain to them what our business even does. But now it's, I think she's like $70 an hour, and now she just basically prints off all the different reports that all of our different software prints out and kind of just makes sure there isn't any discrepancies between them, and then sends us like a monthly report. So it's like, I think we only pay her like three hours a month now that everything's set up.
And is she paying your bills too, or are you handling all that?
So we're paying our own tax, our own state tax. And then too, I just take her big pamphlet she gives to me at the end of the year and give it to an actual – she's just a bookkeeper. So I give it to an actual CPA at the end of the year, all the numbers she crunched. And basically it all comes down to like one line at the end of the packet. You know what I'm saying?
I want to go a little deeper on that because I think that's smart. So you have a separate bookkeeper who you've trained – right. Was she? You said she was experienced in e-commerce prior.
Yeah. She knew e-commerce, and she'd worked with like the different like QuickBooks and Xero and all that kind of stuff. She had some idea what was going on.
Okay. And so then she's doing your bookkeeping. So as you say, she's running your reports. She's not writing your checks or making payments, but she's accounting for them, classifying them and that kind of thing. Is she doing your payroll?
Well, I don't really have a payroll.
Okay, so you don't have a payroll and you're not taking a paycheck or anything like that.
And then it's kind of nice. Like, I talk to all these different software companies all the time where they're trying to shoot me these demos and stuff, and they're always trying to think of like the one giant software that does every single thing in one place. And I almost kind of prefer the opposite. I kind of like it that like I have my inventory in Stitch Labs, and then I have like Xero, which is kind of connected through APIs, and then I also have my inventory in Amazon Seller Central dashboard, because every once in a while there's a discrepancy between the three where all the numbers don't match up, and then it kind of gives me a quick idea where I can go and hunt that down real quick and figure out why there's a discrepancy. But if everything was just in one place, I only had one number, a discrepancy would easily kind of fly under the radar without me noticing.
And is she producing financial statements in Xero for you?
Yeah. It's one of these things where it's like easily she could just hit one button that says print out forms. I don't really know what she does on her end anymore now that it's all set up. The main annoying part is just initial setup.
Right, and then researching discrepancies, they are pain.
Well, and to like the initial processes of like how when we get an invoice, when we want to place a new purchase order, how do you want us to put that into Xero so you know that's a purchase order? And then how do you want to know, so like, crap, I put that on my own personal credit card this time, not the business credit card. Okay, so I took $30,000 out of the business. So all the time she's like emailing us and calling us about stuff like that. Like, wait, Will, there's $10,000 missing. And it's like, oh, sorry, me and Reed took that out and then put it right back in. Like, don't worry about it kind of thing. It'll be in the checking account tomorrow. So she'll catch discrepancies like that all the time, and it's just us being idiots with our accounting.
Is she then also in the inventory side putting your cost of goods in?
No, that's our deal.
Okay, so when you make a purchase, or it's in the purchase order, I guess you're importing the purchase order in probably, and so that allows you to put that cost in, and then you maintain that inventory in Stitch Labs. Does it calculate your cost of goods, or is Xero calculated cost of goods?
So it's a little bit of a combination of both, where okay. It's funny because I don't know exactly because my business partner handles this, but basically I believe that he goes in and punches into Stitch Labs like, I'm ordering from so-and-so vendor, I'm ordering 1,000 units, it costs X amount of dollars, including shipping, and then it breaks it down to a unit cost from there, and then that matches up with what the sales price is, plus minus the fees, and it will give me like an actual profit margin and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool. All right. Sorry, I'm an accountant. I love the details because I answer a lot of questions on this stuff, and I love the fact I love the fact that you have a separate bookkeeper, because I think the two, when you have your tax person and your bookkeeper, they get tax companies get crunch time, and you're shut down. This bookkeeper, that's all she does for you. You know your numbers, right? You get a statement every single month. You know how the business is going. Love it.
Well, it would take me so much longer than it takes her to do it myself.
Yeah. All right, and 3 hours a month. I mean, that's nothing. Okay, but you're paying her well, and that's fair. I love it. All right, last question. So somebody's new to Amazon, and they're asking about, well, how do they determine a good product to sell? And I was thinking about you particularly, right? So I'm thinking about What do you use? I mean, I know you're looking for free money and all that jazz, but do you search for things that are interesting to you? I mean, there must be some trend. Is it a category? Is it, you know, just rank driven? I mean, is there something that keeps you interested in the business besides making money?
Not more like what keeps me interested in the business, more like paranoia than anything, that like someday I'll have to get a real job. That like scares the crap out of me, honestly.
So it's fear.
Seriously though, but because it's like as you were saying, like you're looking at my Facebook and stuff, it's like I have a pretty cool life right now. And so like I can't imagine like 20 years from now if I'm like sitting in like a cubicle being like, wow, my 20s were awesome. Like why didn't I like covet that more? Like why didn't I do a better job of running my business so I didn't have to be here now? And so it's like more like fear than anything.
That's funny. 20 years, I'll still be older than you. Oh, you're killing me. God, you killed me. All right, Will. So, you know, let's talk about podcasting. You and a couple other pretty large sellers. So Will is a seller that 5 million last year, 7 million? You didn't hit 10. You didn't hit 10, did you?
With that, again, this is where with our different Amazon accounts and running them and stuff, it's like – responsible for more than 10 for sure, but it's like, is it me personally doing it, all the work? No, it's different Amazon accounts with different business owners with different everything. So it's
okay.
It's obvious. It's you can slant the numbers any way you wanna.
But you're a mega seller, so we'll call it
sure.
That. So what Will is interested in talking about with Amazon specific is how to grow your business. But you want $1 million seller. You want somebody who's not – where I focus on the person who's stuck at $30,000 a month, right, that $350,000 a year to $500,000 a year. You're looking for that seller who's at $1 million who wants to get to the $10 million level, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think some people kind of luck into a $1 million account, or they already had an established business. They finally brought it on Amazon. They can get it up to $1 million fairly quickly, or say the $500,000 to $1 million fairly quickly. But then from there, it kind of plateaus, and they saw how easy it was to get that first big chunk of cash in from Amazon, and they know it can be repeatable. And so, like, how do they first off optimize their business, and two, what kind of skills and tactics are they going to use to really take their business to the next level? And like, that's not just like product research, but it's also like, how are you going to fund this? How are you going to organize your business? How are you going to promote this and all that type of stuff?
Because it's a big different business, right? I mean, at that point, it's a large. You've got big problems, big business, big problems, right?
Yeah, I think Ben Horowitz talks about it in his book on management, The Hard Things About Hard Things, where it's like every time you times a business size by 3 or 10, all of your processes fall apart. And so you can be up to 3 people, everything is fine, but then once you go from 3 to 30, everything falls apart. And then from 30 to 90, everything falls apart. And then from 90 to 900 people, everything falls apart. So it's kind of thing where you can have all these processes in place where everything's running fine as a one-man show, one-woman show, but as soon as things actually start scaling, things can fall apart pretty quickly if you don't have tight processes in place.
Well, even when you have a staff of 3 or 4, you're probably still managing it. Now you bring in a manager when you get to that 8 to 10, and then there's a communication gap, right? That's the first place, and that really can break down a company. And if you don't have that if you're not on the same page, if you don't have those processes, you will fail. You will fail without your control, right? And that's one of the big things. So when do you plan on starting the podcast?
So we have about 3 or 4 episodes fully recorded. We're actually later tonight going to kind of tie up some loose ends. And I think next week, which is the like 12th through 15th, we're going to start launching it next week, the 12th to 15th of August. And then I'm sure if you are in any of the Amazon space or anything, I'm going to be pitching it out to everyone, sharing it everywhere. So I'm sure you'll see it somewhere.
I'll put a link here too on this episode where you can reach out to find it, because I think there's a niche there that isn't spoken. And I've had, you know, you, and I've had a bunch of other $5 to $10 million sellers, but it's so, you know, when you're talking about a giant warehouse with a giant crew, it's just so unrelatable to most people. It really is. Those issues do need to get talked about though, because again, they're different. And so if you could find like-minded people in the same situation. All right, so you're not busy enough. You're going to start a podcast. What else are you doing?
Just traveling a ton, doing consulting, running my own Amazon accounts, just trying to keep basically busy, always selling, always kind of looking out for the next big thing. We'll see.
And what do you think is the next big thing?
I'm not sure. I have like big ideas, but not stuff that I can like execute that I think are like the next big thing. But basically, I'm just kind of laying low for the next type of business opportunity that I can grow to the moon without investing very much cash up front, and then kind of capitalizing on that, and hopefully it's something not in the Amazon space, so I can kind of diversify my revenue streams a little bit more.
Yeah, that makes sense, because yeah, you've got a large investment into Amazon. So, all right, very cool. All right, best way to get in touch with you. So I'm going to have a link out there for a podcast. That'll be a place that people can ask questions, that kind of thing. Do you mind if I pop your Facebook contact info out there?
Oh, yeah, no, not at all. It's Facebook/Chernlund, my last name, TJERNLUND, at WTJERN on Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. Also, WilliamChernlund@gmail.com if you have any questions.
Okay, awesome. Dude, man, it is so great catching up to you. I can't wait to see where you're going next. It'll be some fun place. I'm going to Vegas, and you won't be there. Let's see, where else am I going? Nashville, you won't be there. You're going to be in fun places.
I'm actually going to Nashville soon. When are you going to Nashville?
In September.
I'm going September like 7th or something that weekend.
Yes, that's what I'll be there. All right, dude, we're in.
All right,
I got a plan. All right, I got plans.
Minnesota Vikings play the Titans.
All right. Well, you'll be at a party. I got a party going, so I won't invite you. All right, my friend. Hey, I wish you nothing but success, man. It's just great to catch up. I can't wait to hear the next episode in April. I can't wait to hear the show, and that was a little hint out there that there's something coming in April. But I do want to – I can't wait to hear the show. I'll be traveling this week. I can't wait to get back and hear it. I'm looking forward to it. And, of course, if I can help you in any way, you let me know.
Perfect. Sounds
Best
good.
Wishes.
Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Man, another great interview. There are a couple of really great interviews coming up. I'm going to do some traveling, but they're coming out, and I'm blown away. I appreciate you being patient as my audio issue still gets resolved. I don't like the sound of this particular piece of the recording, but the other stuff came out great. I got reset. Turns out Skype updated, blah, blah, blah. You don't care about that. ecommercemomentum.com. I'm blogging a little bit. A lot of content out there. There's free if you sign up. You get 25 things you can outsource in your business and some ideas about maybe hopefully some things you didn't think about. And one of my guests in the next couple weeks will help you with that outsourcing. So I really hope you keep listening. ecommercemomentum.com. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.